I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Hello, and welcome back to Keanu Believe It, the Talk Film Society podcast that is all Keanu Reeves, all the time. I'm Sam Van Heeren, assistant editor at TFS, and a lifelong fan of the singular Keanu Reeves. I am your guide through his diverse and interesting career. Each week, a guest and I discuss a film from his filmography, which we've been working through in chronological order. On this episode, we'll be discussing The Bad Batch. Joining me to discuss the film is Michelle Egan. How's it going, Michelle?
It's going good. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Excited to chat with you about Keanu and this movie in particular. So before we get into the movie, why don't you let us know about your thoughts on Keanu Reeves in general?
I've always loved Keanu Reeves. I mean, I don't see how you couldn't. He's a very unique actor with a very unique filmography, and there's a lot of stuff that I remember watching, like, a ton. Like, when I was a kid with him in it. Like, Speed, obviously. The Devil's Advocate was actually a favorite of my sister and I. Nice. Which seems kind of weird. It's a very, like, over-the-top, like, crazy movie. But we loved it and loved him in it. Parenthood was another one that we watched a lot. He has a great little role in that. So
yeah, that's something I keep recommending is that there's that, especially that one scene is so good between him and Diane Weiss is just
right.
So great.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking of too. So yeah, I love Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, I'm just so glad. I guess one of the things I keep loving about this series is just knowing how many people feel the same way as I do, and just that he's just such a likable person in general, and then also just, I mean, it's just right there in the intro how diverse his choices always are, and this one we're going to be discussing, The Bad Batch, is one of those examples that
definitely.
So, had you seen this before?
No, last night was the first time.
So, what did you think about it?
At first, I wasn't really that into it. Like, it wasn't my kind of movie particularly, yeah. Or maybe not just at the time I was watching it, but mm-hmm. I've been reading it. I've been trying to read the positive reviews, you know, instead of the negative ones. And
sure.
I've gotten a lot more out of it than that. So I think I gave it like a 2.5 stars on Letterboxd or whatever, but I think I might up it because I appreciate it a lot more now.
Yeah. Have you seen Anna Lily Amanpour's other movie, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night?
Yeah, I did see that, and again, yeah, that wasn't my thing. Like, it was a good movie, and I really liked it, but it just kind of not my thing. Maybe a little too slow. Maybe I wasn't in the right mindset, you know, to watch it at the time. So I kind of want to give that one another shot too after watching this one.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think it's something with both times. I just kind of had the same feeling where, like, I respected it a lot, like, or what she, especially on a craftsmanship level. Like, I think she's definitely very gifted visually, and her style's really interesting and unique. Like, immediately you can tell this is the work of someone, you know, she's already got a voice, and I will always appreciate that, even if, for whatever reason, neither movie's really my cup of tea, or just not. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, not every movie is going to be for every person. And neither time I haven't been upset that I've watched either one, you know.
Right. She definitely has a lot of skill as a director. And you can see that in both of the movies with the way that they're shot. And they're both very different looking, obviously. You know, A Girl Who Walks Home Alone at Night is in black and white. And this is like vivid color. So she's got skills for both of those things, and I want to see what she does more.
Yeah, I was wondering about that translation, because again, like from that, you know, black and white to color, see how, and just, this thing is really great looking. I mean,
yeah.
Just from the first shot, like it's just immediately, it's very, it jumps out at you, and it's, yeah, I mean, it's, there's a lot of movies where, you know, they're neon look that look the same, you know, like lots of mm-hmm. bright color, but this one seems different right away.
And I love this type of movie anyway, like dystopian apocalyptic stuff. I love it. Mm-hmm. And especially like the desert setting, I think looks absolutely beautiful. And she really captured that.
Yeah. I think with both movies, like for whatever, I think both movies have kind of left me a little emotionally detached. I don't know if that's how much of that's intentional, because it seems like she's definitely going for something, but it just, to me, it just, I never really connected to any of the characters. It just kind of, like, I just, again, it was just more appreciated on it aesthetically than anything narratively, even if it's interesting. I think I can see what she's going for, and I respect that, and I, but for whatever reason, just, I never really connected to it.
I think that was kind of the point of the movie, though, is that, you know, no character is really good.
Sure.
But, you know, in this environment that they're put in, you know, is any character really bad? I mean, they're all just trying to survive, and they all do it in different ways. And yeah, the ending, I've read some people say, like, the ending is just kind of like, what? Like, really? That's how you're going to end this? But I think it's a very honest ending for what she was saying for the rest of the movie.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we might as well, you know, dive into the plot here a little bit. This opening with, you know, just this young... One thing that struck me right away is just how little dialogue there actually is in this movie. There's a lot of just... action, lots, or not even action, just a lot of events happening without much speaking. I mean, I think the first bit of dialogue is like almost 20 minutes into the movie. There's some like lines spoken, but not necessarily dialogue earlier than that. But that just struck me right away. Pretty, I wasn't expecting that.
No, I wasn't either, and I actually didn't even notice that. I was like, wait a minute, no one has talked in a while, because I was kind of into it, like with the visuals and like getting mm-hmm. getting a sense of like, okay, where we were, what, you know, what's going on. And then like, yeah, it kept going. I was like, why is nobody talking in this movie? But I was still into it. Like I had my notebook out. I was like ready to take notes while I was watching it. And I didn't really make any notes while I was watching it, because mm-hmm. I was kind of transfixed on watching it.
Yeah, I think what worked best for me, I think, yeah, is this opening, the first act, just because it does a good job of establishing that world and not necessarily spoon feeding you what the, you know, this world is. Like, there's the early on, I mean, it starts with her getting a tattoo and then being dropped off, like, in the middle of this desert. And I noticed, like, there's a sign early on that says, I'm still not 100% clear on what this world is, and I think that's intentional. I think you're not supposed to really know, but it says something about, like, beyond this fence, you're no longer in Texas, you're in the United States. So it's something maybe like Texas seceded or something, or it's a little unclear, but that's okay. I appreciated that it wasn't necessary. It was just kind of throwing us into this world.
Yeah, but it was important to say, like, you're no longer in Texas, you're no longer... The government has no authority here. Like, you're on your own, pretty much. And then, like, the last line of the sign is, good luck. I noticed that, too, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, they just give her a cheeseburger, a backpack, and a gallon of water. Like, that's it. You know, that's...
Yep.
Here you go. And it's very much, you know, it's very, you know, reminiscent of clearly the, you know, the border, the, you know, refugee kind of a... refugee status a little bit there, and it's clear that she keeps referring to herself, or they refer to them as the Bad Batch, and so it's something we're not 100% sure on what that means, but you can kind of tell, like, that it's some kind of just unwanted people, basically.
It's their version of a prison.
Right. It's almost like Australia, you know, like...
Exactly,
like
I was thinking that,
colony.
Too.
But yeah, and then what struck me right away is, so Suki Waterhouse is the main character here. Her name is Arlen, which I didn't really notice until, if I hadn't been following along on the, you know, like the IMDb, I wouldn't necessarily have known her character name until maybe like the last 20 minutes when they actually say it, but that's fine. But
I had the subtitles on, so I caught all the character names. Cause I,
nice.
Yeah, otherwise I would have been like, what am I supposed to call him? What, Miami Man? Okay.
Right, I think that, yeah, that is his name. Yeah, Miami Man is his name. So yeah, this, it, you know, starts with her just kind of, I was struck right away that she is kind of just very casual about this situation. Like, she was just thrown in the desert with nothing, and she just, like, this part where she finds a car and then, like, starts putting on some lip gloss. Like, that's, like, the kind of, that's just the world. She just is kind of used to this kind of the world.
Or that she had accepted her place.
Right. And yeah. And I guess, she has a pamphlet. There's a whole, this movie's not really subtle, and that's okay. Subtlety's a little overrated, I think. But she said, like, she's got this, you know, find comfort, find the dream. Like, that's the whole, she keeps seeing signs about looking for comfort and looking for the dream. So again, not, it's wearing its themes on its sleeve.
Yeah, this movie is all about signs as opposed to dialogue,
right. I would say.
But very meaningful signs. They have dual meanings by the end of the film.
Right, yeah. And so then, like, almost immediately she gets captured by some women on a golf cart. Then we find out that, like, she's immediately chained up. And then immediately upon waking up, she gets her two of her limbs chopped off. And that's the movie. There you go. Like, it's not, again, there's full-on cannibals right away.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that the movie started with the main character getting her arm and leg cut off and eaten, which I was very into it from then on. But that, yeah, that was definitely a way to say, like, okay, here we are. This is what we're dealing with.
Right. And so it's basically, in the end, this is like, you know, that it's this heightened version of society, right? Like, that they're actual cannibals, that they're which we'll get into more as we delve into the other part of the society. But yeah, I mean, again, it's, and then she straight up, like, gets her wound cauterized by a frying pan. That was a hell of a way to start it out. And then we cut to these bunch of people that are apparently, this cannibal colony is full of bodybuilders.
I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, and, like, but there's this good, like, Jason Momoa's character makes his introduction as, Miami Man, and the only reason we know that's his name is because he's got a giant tattoo on his chest. And there's some odd, like, I don't think Jason Momoa actually talks till, like, the, like, 45-minute mark, like, almost an hour into the thing. I think he makes some grunts or something, but, like, it's very, again, it's very much, it's almost a silent film for large chunks of the thing.
Yeah.
And so then she basically, you know, very ingenious, kind of disgusting way if she escapes here. She covers herself in shit, and then, so that she has to get washed, and then beats a woman to death, you know, beats one of the cannibals to death. And it's, but again, I think Waterhouse does a really good job here. She's fully committed to this.
She is. She has a great look for the movie, too. She was interesting to look at, even though she doesn't really say anything. And yeah, her commitment to, especially these opening scenes, is pretty good. When she's, like, scooting herself along the floor, you know, after she's got her limbs chopped off and get away.
Yeah, and she's like, but also, again, there are all these people around her, also chained up, also being delimbed, and she's very much committed. She's just caring for herself at this point, and that's kind of the larger point of the movie, that her kind of, her arc there is her eventually learning to that. But it's honestly a little tough to say if she actually does change, and that's fine, not every character needs to change in every movie, but it was a little, I don't really know what the movie's trying to say sometimes, but that's, I don't know if that's on me, not just, you know, picking up on things, but.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure at first either, but I was a little disappointed that she didn't help the other people that were chained up. But
right.
When you think about it, like, what would they have done? It would have just been like a big group of people with no legs up against these bodybuilders. So maybe she didn't do the right thing and just save herself.
Right. So she and ends up escaping on a skateboard, and she uses, you know, just her two remaining limbs to drag herself along, and again the desert, and there's then crows start, you know, she's like basically dying, but then some random hermit with a shopping cart comes along and scoops her up and then takes her to, again, this whole find comfort. There's literally a town called Comfort.
Yep. And who is that hermit?
Yes, so I didn't notice until the second appearance, but yes, it's Jim Carrey.
It's Jim Carrey. It took me a while. I sat there, and it was that scene with him and Jason Momoa. I was just staring at him, and I was like, is that Jim? That's not Jim Carrey. What? It is. I had to actually look on IMDb to make sure I wasn't going crazy.
No, there's three characters in this that are, including Keanu, that are unrecognizable the first time you see them.
Giovanni Ribisi. Yeah.
Yep, and also Diego Luna as the DJ.
I don't know who that is.
Oh yeah, he was in Rogue One and a bunch of other movies. But anyway, so the comfort, and then this skips 5 months to her, and now she's got a, you know, piecemeal slapped together prosthetic leg, and there's some really good, and there is some genuinely really good visual storytelling in this movie. I like that most of what we learn about this world is just through signs and overheard background dialogue. I appreciated that. I think in the end, I think the first hour I really dug it, and it's by the end that it kind of fell apart for me. But again, I'm not it's not necessarily, I could see people getting a lot more out of it. And then there's literally there's this sign that immediately struck that, like, something is off with this town, because there's this big sign that says, you can't enter the dream unless the dream enters you. And at first it's a little just odd, but then we find out what the dream is referring to. It's just really gross.
Really gross and creepy, yeah.
So yeah, basically this is it's a cult town. It struck me that this movie is basically, if you look at just the plot, and it's basically Mad Max Fury Road in terms of...
Yeah, oh, exactly.
Like, yeah, there's a, blonde heroine with a missing limb. And again, there's this guy, you know, this cult town where he keeps them in basic squalor, but enough that they're, quote, safe. And I think, again, this is just a... I think this is going to end up being a movie that I enjoy thinking about more than I actually enjoy watching.
Yeah, that's what I found, too. Definitely made the Fury Road comparison. You know, Keanu Reeves is Immortan Joe with his harem of pregnant ladies. They're all wearing the same t-shirt, though, which is also really gross. It says, "The dream is inside of me."
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
That was horrible.
Just gross in the worst way. But, like, and even, like, the currency is named after him. So that's what we eventually learn, is that, yeah, the dream is this guy, this cult leader played by Keanu Reeves. And but it turns, so it that just kind of spends time. Oh, yeah, Giovanni Ribisi is the, I think his name is the Screamer or something, like the, again, the characters are all just, his name is Bobby. Okay. Anyway.
I didn't.
But yeah, he's barely, I was struck that he's like in two scenes and he's just basically being, speaking gibberish. He makes quite an impression, but it's, an odd character to say the least.
Yeah, he's supposed to be like the crazy one in town, but he's actually, you know, spouting wisdom, you know, subconsciously.
So while she's there, they cut back to finally actually show who. I was a little confused at first who Miami Man actually, like, they cut to him, and I thought that was, like, a different town, because when she's escaping, it was just a little confusing to me that I couldn't really tell who, and then I realized that, no, he's part of this cannibal group.
Yeah.
But, like, I like that his second scene is him painting his daughter, so it's like, it's interesting that the dissonance there of him, you know, being a really loving father and then he goes and snaps a woman's neck,
yeah,
and cooks her up. Like, that was a good, that was a really well done scene, set to Karma Chameleon.
Yeah, the soundtrack of this movie is crazy. I love it. That definitely helped with the no dialogue and stuff.
For sure.
Just having great music in the background that he's listening to on his little Walkman. I love it.
And then also, I think Momoa does a good job here of mostly nonverbal performance of showing a little regret here. Like, he's kind of sick of this this world that he's, even though he's, like, he's basically doing just to, he's doing it to care for his daughter. This is like all he can do, and you know, it's an interesting fact that the cannibals aren't really necessarily the there's no real bad guys in this movie apart from creepy sex cult leader the Dream.
Well, yeah, that's what they're doing in those two characters, is they're establishing, you know, two opposite sides. Jason Momoa is, yeah, he is bad because he's cannibalizing people to survive, but then they also give him that sense of humanity with his daughter and with his artistic abilities, you know, in a mm-hmm. way. Like, that, you know, he does have a heart and feelings, and he does want to take care of people, and he's just doing it in the only way that they know how.
Right.
And then you have the Dream, who is just a cult leader, literally lording over all of these people, giving them drugs to keep them controlled.
Right.
And has this harem of pregnant girls. And, you know, you have to look at those two people and say, who is really the bad guy? You know, and you could have, you know, arguments for both sides, you know, because Keanu Reeves, yeah, he is taking care of people, but is he really doing it for them or for himself?
Right. I mean, they're basically, yeah, they're living in squalor, essentially. It just happens to be that they have a big wall around them, right? Like, they're not really living any better than the cannibal tribes, but they're just not any people. But it's like, okay, but if you were in that situation, and it's funny that there's a movie where, like, are the cannibals so bad?
To be with the Dream, you have to literally be with the Dream. Like, do you want to sacrifice yourself that way? No. Like, most women wouldn't do that ever.
Yeah, and so that's just interesting. And something I noticed that I need to maybe go back and see again, but there's something I noticed that the cannibal tribes kind of operate like lions. Like, they, because the women are the ones that are going out to scavenge for stuff and find people most of the time. I mean, there are some, at least in his camp, I thought that just, I don't know how intentional that was or if I'm misreading something, but I just, that struck me as, because when Arlen goes out to, basically she gets a gun to go out to get revenge for what happened to her, and she comes across this woman with, it's unclear if this is Miami Man's, like, the mother of his child. I wasn't clear.
Yeah, I wasn't sure either. I think you're supposed to think that it's her mother. I'm not sure. I wasn't even sure that it was really his daughter either. Like, this, that's what was confusing
about
this movie.
That he,
right, like, that he assumed as his daughter.
Right. And I don't think it's really important. In the end, either way, these are the two that were caring for this girl. And so she finds, Arlen finds the girl, which is, I don't think we ever get a name for her character.
I was thinking that too, and then I looked it up and she did have a name. I forgot what it was now.
Either way, I'll just call her the daughter for now. We'll find it out. But so yeah, finds the woman, like, breaks her leg, and she finds her with the daughter, and she just comes up and she shoots her in the face. And this is one area that so there was some criticism, and I think some very valid criticism, of the only black characters in this movie get murdered. And it's kind of, there was some, I remember at Fantastic Fest, there were some questions about it, like a woman asked about how the characters are treated, and which is a very valid, that's a very valid criticism that you should, accept that how the optics look. And I think the director kind of responded very negatively. I won't dredge up too much of that. You can look online for the articles about that. But I think it's a very valid point to be made about the fact that, again, there are only two or three non-white or non-Latino characters, and they happen to die. And it's just kind of, it rubbed me the wrong way. I don't think it's a malicious intent on the part of the director, but it's something that you definitely need to be willing to address without getting defensive,
And I honestly didn't even think of that while I was watching it, but that's definitely true. I should have noticed that.
But yeah, I mean, again, I'm not necessarily the person to speak on that, but there's plenty of articles you can look and find about on that. But I think it's the one thing that kind of made me take a double take on that for sure. But anyway,
and
so it goes.
And the daughter's
to,
name. Sorry, then the daughter's name apparently is Honey.
Honey, okay,
on
there you
IMDb.
Go. Thank you, IMDb. So Arlen, kills this woman and then basically takes the kid. It's unclear if she's, like, taking her, if the kid just is following her, but either way, they end up back at Comfort, and now she's got this girl who finds a rabbit along the way. I can't remember exactly when that happens, but then Miami Man comes looking for his, there's a scene where he's, like, looking out over his domain, wondering why his kid's not back yet, and then this starts the main plot of the film.
Just to get Honey back.
Yep. And basically Arlen gives her this rabbit to say, like, if you do what I want, I'll let you keep the rabbit. But then a bunch of stuff happens, and this is where I realized that, yeah, Jim Carrey is the hermit. And this is probably my favorite scene in the movie, just because it's so ridiculous.
Where he asks him to draw him first before he'll say where she went.
Yes, he has him.
That was my favorite scene, too.
Yep, straight out of the Titanic there. So he basically, like, says, I'll tell you where your kid is if you draw me. And just fun. This is, like, Jim Carrey poses, like, and he never says anything in this film. He just makes a few grunts and noises, but... and then this is where we finally realize, yes, that we finally get Keanu 45 minutes into the film.
Who looks amazing.
What's that?
He looks amazing as a 70s porn star, I must say.
For sure. I think this is, again, I'm biased, but I think Keanu is the best part of this movie. I think the fact that he is, I think this is one of those genius castings of him.
I think it was too. I think this role needed somebody like him to really sell the character.
Yeah, otherwise, it's a character now that this is one of the few, which I didn't expect before watching it, that this is a role that I'm like, I could see no one else playing this specific character than Keanu Reeves, and I wouldn't be surprised if she didn't write it with him in mind.
Yeah, because you need somebody with the kind of charm and charisma, and even like his voice. I've always found Keanu's voice very interesting. It just sounds so different than anybody else, and when he's giving his little speech about shit and stuff.
Oh my god, yeah.
That was definitely an interesting part. Like, yeah, his look and I think the way that he carries himself, I think that was what this character needed. So he's not like overly creepy, even though like what he does is really creepy. So
and he's got this Texas, you know, accent. And I thought it was a well done one where he's underplaying it a little bit. It's not like too thick or anything, but also he's kind of like almost, you know, not fully Manson-esque, but a little bit like where he seems likable and he's all about, you know, saying that we're the rejected people, you know, we're the freaks. But I'm, you know, here to say that, like, and literally he's saying, find the American dream, you know, find the dream, and I am the dream.
Exactly.
Basically, I'm God. And it's late, especially later in that scene, probably the other best scene in the movie is the scene in his compound, which we'll get to in a sec. Before that happens, so during this rave they're having, at some point Arlen is given some LSD, and the girl gets separated and ends up, the dream finds her and takes her into his castle.
So then do you think was his reason for taking her?
Gross reasons.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's that he's basically grooming her
to wait until
she's old enough to produce more heirs for him. Very disgusting. But then this is the most visually interesting part of the film here is where Arlen's having this trip. It's just some very... One thing Amarpour is very great at is these hallucinatory visuals, and it's a really impressive sequence.
Yeah, just the whole look of comfort is interesting. You know, obviously a stark contrast to the cannibal compound. It's neon lights. It's that giant, I don't even know what that was, that giant bus or something that...
Oh, yeah.
The side of it looked like a boombox.
Right, yeah, that's great, yeah.
That was really interesting. And, yeah, the music and just the way she shot the whole trippy sequence, definitely cool.
Yeah, I mean, just again, just the... In the end, for me, it's just much more interesting. It's the production design and the visuals that really captured me. And I think what makes it, again, I don't think it necessarily works completely, but it's bold as hell. And I have to respect it, you know.
I do too. I didn't at first, like when I was done, I was like, well, like, I'm not mad that I watched that, but it's not something that I'm going to watch again. And it was pretty cool. But yeah, like I said, reading about it and thinking about it a little more, like, it's definitely got some good points to it. I'm not going to completely dismiss it because it's not my thing or something.
Right. And you never know. It's something I would recommend. I think it's a little too long. I think it could very, again, I get that's kind of her thing is these very intentionally paced, you know, kind of, slow. I don't want to say slow, but it felt slow in some parts. I think the second act could have been trimmed down a little bit. I get maybe she wanted to just spend more time in this world, but I don't know how much was actually needed. But I guess they wanted to have this sequence later. So when she meets up with Miami Man, she's wandering around looking for the girl. Winds up on a trip outside of the desert. This movie's kind of... Characters just kind of find each other. Like, it's nothing in this movie. Like, they're wandering in the middle of this giant desert, but she's just going to randomly wander into the cannibal leader.
Like, there's only... I wonder how many people are actually out here, because it just seems to be these two factions... And they always seem to find each other
around.
Yeah, but they do always seem to find each other.
So yeah, it basically turns into this thing where she never really, it's weird because she's the one that took his daughter, but she just kind of she doesn't actually know that they're connected at this point, until he shows her the drawing that, like, this is my, and she's still very selfish at this point. She still really doesn't give a shit about, that kid, it's not really till she ends up. I guess that's really the reason there's. It's full 2 hours because they wanted to try to connect Arlen and Miami Man, but I don't think it ever really.
Well, yeah, worked. This is the guy who literally ate her. So yeah, there's some stuff they have to work through before she's willing to help him.
Right. So this is basically the next 25 minutes is them. Hanging out, trying to get, I guess, bonding. I don't know if they're supposed to be. It's a little odd because it seems like they're bonding, but then there's the next scene she tries to kill him again, so it's very odd. But
well, she doesn't trust him.
Right, which, why obviously. Would you? He's eating you. But
I don't think it's about them bonding. I think it's about them just coming to an understanding with each other.
That could be right. Yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, so they. They're wandering through, trying to get back. Basically, he wants her to go into, whether he knows that she did it or not, it doesn't really matter at this point. He just wants his kid back. So they, wind up at a campfire, and this is a good scene. I think Jason Momoa does a great job here. I'm frankly Team Cannibal at this point in this movie, which is, an odd thing to say, but I think, like, this is the world that they're forced into, and it's, you know, it's like, is it, you know, in capitalism, that's basically what it is, right? Like, we eat each other. It's just literal in this world.
Yep. I was Team Campbell when we met the Dream, because I just, no. Not into no that. No, thank you. Not into that or what you're doing. cannibalize the Dream, please.
Eventually they wind up, Miami Man gets shot, one of the guys from Comfort shows up and takes Arlen back to the city. This is odd, because, like, there's a part where he says, like, does he, like, know who she is? But it's also, like, she also says, like, he thinks that maybe she's a... They keep referring to people as the bridge people. I think that's what they refer to cannibals as. I don't know what that means, but they say that multiple times, and I guess it doesn't really matter. But
yeah, I did catch that. I wasn't sure what they were talking about. They meant the bridge. But yeah, I think was he a part of Comfort, or was he just another, like, random guy who just wanted her?
Yeah.
In exchange for gas.
Oh, well, that guy. Oh, yeah, I skipped over that part. Yeah, you're right.
Sorry. Who are you talking about?
No, I was talking about this. Let's talk about that first. Yeah, before they get back to Comfort, there's, like, another cannibal shows up and is trying to, like, force Miami Man into trading her for the gas. And at first, Miami Man goes along with it, but then ends up killing the guy. This is, again, second black character in the movie gets killed and then eaten. But then there's that scene at the campfire, where he tells her about, that he was from Cuba. And this is a little, and it's funny, it's like Jason Momoa is a half Hawaiian, half white guy playing a Cuban.
I noticed that. Yeah.
But yeah, eventually she winds up back in Comfort, and at first it seems like she's just gonna blow Miami Man off, like, not go look for the kid, but then she just suddenly decides to do it, and it's not really, I don't know how, what convinces her to do it apart from just deciding. It's a little odd, but it's okay.
I think she recognized that maybe he was a better option for the little girl than Keanu Reeves. That scene that the two of them have, I think she was kind of like, yeah, you're gross, and we're going to get this girl out of here now.
And I love that she goes, like, she literally, oh, that's right, she's looking at drawings, and she finds, like, a drawing of her, and then goes make copies, because we're in this apocalyptic world, it's gonna make some mimeographs, but anyway, so she goes handing out flyers, and then Giovanni Ribisi wants her to look at his puzzles.
Which is an upside down American flag. Just kind of symbolic there.
Yeah, in pieces, and he walks over it. Yeah.
Yep.
Very symbolic. And eventually she kind of gives up the search and then winds up at the... There's this good shot of, like, her by the sign again, and now it says, this isn't real.
Yeah. I love that shot.
Yeah, and then just happens to the harem of pregnant women with now all have, you know, machine guns, and the girl's just part of that team. And this is where it really shows that, yeah, that's probably what the dream's idea was to eventually fold Honey into the disgusting harem, because she's, like, wearing one of the shirts that the other women are wearing.
But then you have to wonder about what his ultimate goal is. Like, all these women are pregnant, so they're all going to have babies. Like, is he going to be able to sustain this world? Is he going to be able to care for all these people? Like, it just shows that he's not really thinking about other people. He's just thinking about himself and what he wants in the situation.
Yeah, in the end, cults are never going to really last. I think it's like doomsday sex cults are probably going to collapse at some point, but yeah, that's kind of the point. He doesn't really care. He's very much like he thinks, and if there's stuff so yeah, this all leads to her. Arlen talks her way into the compound, basically pretending that she's gonna join it, and then this is a really, I think this scene's probably the best scene in the movie, is this scene of Keanu. I mean, again, biased for the Keanu super fan. But I just think he does a really good job, and I think the way it's kind of tense and weird, and it's unclear exactly, because, you know, Arlen's motivations are never really clear throughout the movie, but it kind of works to the advantage of the film in this scene, because it's a little weird. You don't know if she's actually being pulled into, you know, his buying into his bullshit, but there's just this really great speech he gives about, just ridiculous about talking, like you said, talking about shit and that we're humans because we don't stand on our shit. And then he says stuff about planting his seed. Again, not...
Yes. I hated
very
that.
Very blunt.
I was like, really, dude? Are you really going there? I think that maybe that was the moment where she decided, no, she's going to take this guy down.
Right. She eventually... So she, like... but yeah, just Keanu just does a great job in this scene of, like, even though he's saying ridiculous nonsense, it, like, the way he's, you can see why he's pulled other people into his web of idiocy, but, like, you know, he's convincing in his, pretentious, I am God bullshit.
Mm-hmm. That's what a good cult leader does.
then we realized, nope, she was doing this all along to, cause she hid. So, like, they take her to a bathroom because she's like, basically she quote accepts his offer. But no, she's hiding, a gun in her fake leg, which of course she is.
Of course. Where else would you hide your gun?
this is where I can kind of see the complaints about the ending, cause it is literally like, there's no struggle here at all. Like, it's basically like, again, it's not trying to be an action movie, so I get it, but it's like, it still feels a little too easy. Like, she points a gun at one of the pregnant women's, and why would he care? Like, why would the cult leader care if he offs one of them when he's got a whole army of them? But it's weird, but I guess he just kind of lets them go, and yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I did expect there to be a little bit more of a fight, you know, especially with Jason Momoa around. But nope, it was just kind of easy. But I don't know, maybe that was just another part of his character too. He's like, He knows he's full of shit, right? So
right.
He's already got all these people. Like, maybe if he couldn't get that one girl, whatever. There'll be another one that comes along. They're always adding new bad batches out into the wasteland.
Sure.
He'll get the next one.
Yep, that's a good point for sure. But yeah, so so she takes her out, takes the girl out, and then they find, again, they just kind of wander in a direct straight path right to his, right to Miami Man, because I guess this is just a big circle of a desert. But they reunite, and Arlen kind of is like, when they're about to leave, she says something like, what are you up to? Do you want to hang out? Like, again, this kind of... there's also other parts throughout the movie that she's kind of... that the young people in this world are kind of uneducated, because she says stuff like... one part she's like, oh, Cuba, that's in the Pacific, right? By Hawaii.
Yeah.
So this is very much, I think, like... this is like a... very much like a post-Trump apocalypse, like where everyone's very much like... kind of just like they're coasting through life. They're very much like again, this is kind of her whole thing. And so her reaction to try to, or her way to try to convince her to join with him is by, you know, asking him on a date. It's pretty funny.
Well, I don't know if she was really asking him out on a date. Oh. I think it was just more like, hey, I've been through all this. I've decided to align myself with you. I trust you now.
Sure.
That's how I kind of read it.
Okay. No, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's just kind of her... more what I was trying to say is, yeah, like her... the way she approaches it is just kind of a funny, like, young person way of saying, can we bond together now? Like, band together now. It just kind of made me chuckle. but yeah, then it... and he's kind of like, the fuck are you talking about? I'm not going to let you... like, you're not going to like... You want to be a cannibal now? Like, what's your deal? But she's like... and again, it's like... he says... I think he even says something about, like, go back to your comfort. So, again, not subtle, but that's okay. And then... it kind of ends weird here, where, like, the... basically, the... it's a very dark... very, super dark ending, kind of, where, like... he, I mean, it's optimistic too, I guess, but like, you know, in a strange way, but he, the daughter is like, starts whining that she wants spaghetti because the other man gave me spaghetti. And then he kills her rabbit. Her pet rabbit.
They're eating grim. The money at the end, and she's just sitting there crying. Yeah, that was a very sad scene. But again, a very honest ending, you know, at the same time, like, we can't take care of a rabbit. We have to eat. We have to survive. You know, that's kind of how I saw it. Like, she's got to learn.
Yeah, I guess if it had ended very happily with them all, you know.
Yeah, that wouldn't have felt. That would have felt really false.
It would have felt forced and dishonest for sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, and that's the final scene, is them, her crying as they eat the pet rabbit, and Arlen kind of smiling, goofing off. That she's found her. This is probably the first time she's actually even. She's making a decision, right? Like, it's.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's deciding to be a cannibal, but she's. But maybe not. Maybe the rabbit's maybe they're gonna change the world. Who knows?
Maybe yeah, because the whole movie is her, you know, trying to find where she belongs in this wasteland and trying out different things. Trying out the cannibals. No, definitely not them. Trying out. Keanu Reeves? No, definitely not him. Maybe they found a middle ground where they can exist together.
Yeah, we won't eat people or start horrible sex cults.
Exactly. Don't want to do either one of those.
That's a good rule to live life by.
I think so.
Yeah, so that does it for The Bad Batch. I think it's worth checking out. I think it might not be for you, but it's definitely nothing like you've necessarily... Again, you haven't seen a movie exactly like this in terms of, and just in the end, I think I'm always going to look forward to seeing what she'll do next. Maybe she'll kind of find a story that gets its hooks in me better than either one of these, but at the same time, I think they're worth checking out if you're curious, and especially if you're a Keanu fan, just because Keanu gets to do there's some great over-the-top dialogue that he gets to deliver, and I think it's worth checking out.
Yeah, it won't be for everybody, but, you know, for some people, this is their favorite kind of movie, so I definitely recommend it to people to check out. You never know what you're going to connect with and how. And I think this definitely has some things in it that you can latch onto and learn something from.
Yeah, definitely. And it's, I mean, for me, I'd rather probably just watch Fury Road again instead. But I think she's definitely a voice that I'm going to be paying attention to. And I think coming up, she's directing an episode of the new Twilight Zone reboot. So,
Nice.
Yeah, I think she, in the end, I think she could just maybe, I think she's a little stronger as a director than writer, but at the same time, I wouldn't want her to dilute her voice. So it's cool that she gets to do just kind of pure direct on TV, because she did some episodes of show Legion as well, which were really well done. And yeah. So before signing off, do you have anything you'd like to plug, where the people can find your stuff online?
I've got a couple different places I write at. Wicked Horror, Ghastly Grinning. I posted a couple of things on F This Movie, so you can look there. Mostly I'm just on Twitter talking about movies.
Awesome. Yeah.
Annoyingly.
Yeah, and I'll have your Twitter bio or Twitter handle will be in the description of this episode. So yeah, please go follow her and check out her stuff. Thanks so much for being on, Michelle.
Thank you. This was fun.
Yeah, and thanks all for listening. Join me next time. We'll be discussing To the Bone. Until then, keeping excellent to each other.